Company is a 1970 musical with music and lyrics by Stephen Sondheim and a book by George Firth. It centers around Bobby, a single man with commitment issues, his three girlfriends, and the five married couples who are his best friends. Instead of a linear story, it's told in a series of vignettes in no particular order that reveal the personalities and relationships around Bobby, all of which circle around his 35th birthday party. Also, I say it's his 30th birthday like seven times this episode, and I apologize in advance for that. Company was commercially successful and critically acclaimed, being nominated for a record-setting 14 Tony Awards and winning six. It's been revived many times, including the 2020 Gender Swap revival that was slated to open on March 12th of this year, but has been pushed back. This episode was recorded before that Broadway closure was announced. Also, a quick note on the musical's badness bracket. We are down to the top eight shows, and there are some heavy hitters in there, so go down to the link in the description to vote on this next round. My guest today is Allison Truge, an artist, designer, and host of the Most Important Meal podcast. I hope you enjoy our conversation about Company. Hi, Truge. How are you?
Hi, Quinn. I'm doing great.
What are we talking about today?
We are talking about one of my favorite Broadway musicals, Company.
Woo!
Stephen Sondheim's Company. The Company. It's not The Company. It's just Company.
Drop the. It's cleaner. I'm so excited to talk about this today. So let's start out with, how did this musical first enter your life?
Yeah, so the first time that I saw Company was in 2011. So I was a theater kid in high school, and a bunch of us, it was really soon after I graduated high school, a bunch of us were like just wanting to see a movie, and someone was kind of like, oh, they're doing a showing of Company like at this really big theater near like where I grew up. And I was kind of like, oh yeah, cool. Like, I didn't know anything about it. Like, clearly I really like Stephen Sondheim. Like, Into the Woods is another one of my favorite musicals, but I had never heard of Company or anything like that before. And so we all kind of like went to go see it. And I remember, this is so wild that I remember this, but like, I remember being shocked at the price of a ticket to go see Company. It was a taped show of, like, and they were just playing it at movie theaters, but it was the Neil Patrick Harris version of Company, and it had a ton of other like super famous people in it, like Christina Hendricks was in it. It was just totally bananas and amazing. But I remember going to see it, and like I bought tickets at like the counter, and they were like, that'll be $17, and I was like, are you kidding me? Because apparently they were like showing it in theaters like and donating the proceeds to something. I don't really know what it was, but we ended up seeing that like the Neil Patrick Harris version of Company, and like from the very beginning I was like, this is like absolutely such an amazing musical. I was really, really shocked by it because, I mean, also I had like just turned 18, and so this was one of the first musicals that I ever saw that was like, I don't know, like not that like dealt with more adult themes, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of mark it as like a coming of age of me. And little did I know that I would encounter so many people like Bobby in my early 20s dating experiences. that's just that. But yeah, that's my relationship with Company. I absolutely love it. I recently became even more obsessed with it because we watched one of the episodes of Documentary Now called Co-op, where they parody the like documentary of Company, and that episode is really amazing. So it like made me fall in love with Company again, as well as the new revival, which like kind of takes a lot of things in the musical that don't age very well and makes them a lot better. So it's been a big journey for me and that musical.
That's such an exciting path back into the forefront of your heart here in musical theater lands.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a theater kid all throughout high school. And then I went to a college where like musical theater was one of like eight majors basically that you could do. And so I like I had a, like friends in musical theater and stuff like that, but I kind of took a departure from that land and kind of am coming back now being like, oh, what's up here? This is nice.
Also, a side note, if you want to hear me and Truj talk more specifically about that documentary, now parody documentary, that is going to be going up at the same time as this episode in the Incomparable Members Only feed. So there's a link in the show notes if you are not already an Incomparable member to become a member and hear us talk about that.
I like honestly could have talked about co-op for 2 hours, but I guess we can do this.
Yeah. Well, just to stick with the original masterpiece before we go on to the parody masterpiece.
Right. Absolutely.
So I have been aware of Company for a while. It's a very famous musical. I mean, it's sort of one of the pillars of Sondheim's catalog, I would say, and has been revived several times, all this good stuff. But I really never really knew a lot about it. I've only become a little more aware recently with the upcoming revival, which we'll get to more specifically later. But it really was only when I sat down to research more for this episode that I actually like fully listened to the soundtrack all the way through, and really grasped what Company is as a whole beyond like the random songs I had heard here and there and the general concept of man is unmarried.
Right. Man has trouble with intimacy. Man has so many women who love him so much and he can't love them back.
Man has serious commitment issues. Yeah.
Man has problem. is too many women.
Man has problem is the, like, you know when they say, like, take a movie and make it, describe it badly? Like, that's the bad description of most shows on Broadway.
Right. I think the description of Company specifically, like a bad description, would be like everyone in love with Bobby. Bobby can't be in love with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's a case that every single person in this show is in love with him.
Yeah. Well, and that's because the show is from the perspective of Bobby.
Right. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, well, before we get too much into the weeds on the plot, which there is a lot to get into, just to set the stage a little bit of where this existed in Broadway, it came out in 1970. It's like a very 70s show, and it was nominated for 14 Tony Awards, which was the record at the time, and won 6. But what I thought was really interesting about this is it was the one and only year that they separated out the Best Score Tony Award to be Best Lyrics and Best Music. And Sondheim had written both, so he won both. And then I guess they were like, well, that was a bad idea. And then they just put it back to one.
That's amazing. Wait, I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, I just saw that today and I was like, that's so funny.
What a weird thing to like only win for lyrics and not win for music.
I mean, I would say there are definitely shows that have like very strong music but not very strong lyrics, and I could see that happening maybe.
Oh, like maybe Sweet Charity. And like, don't come for me. I absolutely love Sweet Charity, but like I can definitely see how like the interesting music part of Sweet Charity is like a little more strong, I would say, than the lyrics in Sweet Charity.
Mm-hmm. Or like most of Andrew Lloyd Webber's catalog. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
It's my job to come for Andrew Lloyd Webber at least once an episode.
Honestly, don't say that too loud because Brian is in this room and he knows when people are talking bad about Cats, even if they're not talking bad about Cats directly.
We already had a full episode of me talking bad about Cats, okay? I suppose that's not even me coming for Andrew Lloyd Webber since he's not the one writing the lyrics to these shows. But I find him culpable anyway.
Honestly, I have a bone to pick with Andrew Lloyd Webber because I was once broken up with during intermission at a production of The Phantom of the Opera, and I'll never recover from it.
During intermission
with my mom had driven us there. He broke up with me during intermission.
Oh my god, that's replacing the worst place to break up with someone that I had knew before, which was on a boat.
Wow.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, no, I would say that this is worse. Because also we were like with my sister and one of our friends and my mom. And like all of us were there. We stayed for the second half.
Yeah, because at least on a boat is also terrible, but at least there are other places to go. You got assigned seats at Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, no, exactly. It was, and like he couldn't leave. My mom had driven him there.
Yet another reason why Stephen Sondheim is better than Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Honestly, yeah. In my book, absolutely. In my heart, Stephen Sondheim has never, like, done me like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Although I will say, breaking up with someone at the intermission of Company would be quite the move.
Here's the thing. Okay, I can absolutely see why this would happen. Because, like, Company, it becomes so existential about what love is and about what our purpose is in this life. Like, when it comes to loving other people and having care for other people. And I think I could see how someone who doesn't know what the musical is about goes into the first half and then, like, becomes very disillusioned and they're just like, I can't love anyone.
Oh, absolutely.
But I also feel like the thing that I love the most about Company, which is, like, I don't know that I can say that about this, like, next thing, about any other kind of media, except for a couple of exceptions, where, like, seeing Company makes me excited to love someone. Like, it makes me think about all of the ways in which we are afraid to love, and it makes me excited to go out and love. And, like, I don't really know what other piece of media I can say that about, really.
It's such a beautiful message to take away from this musical, and I think that's what the creators would want you to take away from it.
Yeah, I think especially, like, one of the things that I love to talk about when it comes to Company is that, like, it was written and came out first in the 70s. And, like, I think one of the cute things about it is that kind of 70s motif and styling has kind of stayed consistent in Company the whole time. Like, it's still kind of set in the 70s. I'm not sure about the revival because I've listened to the soundtrack, but I haven't seen it. So I'm not sure if it retains that, like, 70s quality, but at least, like, the Neil Patrick Harris version does. But even though it's set in the 70s, it's still, like, really timeless in so many ways. But it kind of talks about how, like, I feel like a lot of people in the 70s were thinking, like, there was such a division between, like, the kind of love people experienced in, like, the 60s and then onward. Like, the 60s just changed the way that people loved each other for a long time, because all of a sudden it's not like, oh, you need to have, like, a nuclear family of, like, you know, a husband and a wife and, like, children kind of a thing. I think in the 60s people were kind of like, oh, there's, like, lots of ways that, like, people can love each other kind of a thing. At least not as radical as it is now, but if you're thinking about the lesson that we've learned as a society in love since the 70s, that's, like, the lesson that we've learned is, like, the different ways that we can love. And so I can kind of see the disillusionment, like, in 1970, where it's like, oh, think about all the different ways that, like, people love each other, but they're also bad to each other. Like, there are 5 different couples that are showcased in the show, other than, like, the 3 girlfriends that Bobby has. And each of them kind of, to me, like, indicates the kind of, like, deterioration of a relationship. Like, you kind of have, like, a couple that, like, hate each other a little bit, but they're still together. You have a couple that is just about to get a divorce. You have, like, a couple where someone is cheating on the other one. Like, there's all of these, like, moments of deterioration when it comes to their love. And so Bobby's kind of looking at all of that and being like, what do you get out of all of this? Like, literally, one of the lyrics, like, what do you get? And so I think that question, like, was so present in 1970, and it doesn't cease to be present, but I don't know. That's something that I think about a lot when it comes to Company, is, like, about how that question has evolved. Because they also did a rewrite of Company in the early 90s, apparently. I think the only versions that I've seen have been past, like, 1990. So I'm not exactly sure what the changes were, but the fact that the show has been updated at least twice, I think, says a lot. But, like, but the show itself can be the same, and, like, the existential questions can still be the same.
Mm-hmm. Sondheim actually gave a quote that's really similar to what you're saying here, where he talked about how this was one of the first musicals that was on Broadway that was really trying to confront, like, real world adult problems, yeah, that were just, like, in people's lives. He said, these people really want to escape that world when they go to the theater. And then here we are with Company talking about how we're going to bring it right back in their faces, which I think is exactly what you're saying, where it's like, this show is just trying to grapple with very ordinary ideas, but putting it through these lens where you can see it from afar and see people dealing it with it through Sondheim lyrics, which is much more enjoyable than doing it in your own life.
Yeah. And I think, like, it's also a very, like, upper middle class problem of, like, I mean, everyone experiences trouble with love and, like, the deterioration of love over time and, like, different kinds of love. But I think particularly, like, all of these people living in this apartment building together, which is what I've always pictured, that, like, they all are pretty well off and they don't have a whole lot of other problems than, like, thinking about if the person that they're with is actually the right person.
Yeah, it's like everyone has these problems, but these are the only kind of people who this is their biggest problem.
And they're the people that go to see Broadway shows.
Yes, exactly. And so they all, everyone in the audience and, like, everyone on the stage is all kind of obsessed with this idea of marriage and relationships and what that means.
Yeah. I didn't mention this before, but, like, when I first saw this show, the Neil Patrick Harris version in 2011, I had just been broken up with. That was actually the boy who broke up with me at Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, no.
So I was, like, really torn up about it. it was really upsetting, which, like, is so funny because I look back on that time and I look at the kind of person that my ex has become and I'm kind of like, oh man, I really dodged a bullet. Especially, like, the way that he broke up with me, super dodged a bullet. But, like, I think that musical came along at a time when I really needed it. Like, I was just thinking to myself, like, how can we love anyone? Like, that was also, like, my first great love was that person. And so, I mean, I wouldn't refer to it that way now, but, like, when I was 18, he was, like, the first great love that I had ever had. And so I was kind of like, how to love anyone or anything ever again. And then I just saw this show and I was like, I'm just really ready to go out there and love someone.
I love that this did this to you, this 18-year-old Trude. She was like, you know what? You're right. There are other people out there and love is worth pursuing.
What do you get out of it, Quinn?
So I'm experiencing all of this for the first time, and I haven't seen either the filmed version or any live version. So I don't think I've had it as a close emotional experience as you've had with it. But I definitely, even just from the beginning of listening to it, was like, oh, this is something special. And I mean, obviously, it's a very beloved show, so this is a non-controversial opinion that it's special. But I do agree with a lot of what you're saying in terms of, like, the way that it grapples with these issues of love and relationships on a much deeper level than most media does, where the idea of romantic love is central to, like, 90% of media, to the point where it's very oversaturated in most places. But this goes to a so much deeper level than it's not like a will they or won't they story. It doesn't even have a clean narrative arc at all. Like, it's non-chronological. There's no clear order to the scenes. They exist as a series of vignettes, but they all ask interesting questions about relationships and present it in a way that allows you, as the person who is watching and or listening, to ask those questions of yourself instead of just being told, like, oh, they do or do not get together at the end.
Yeah, because especially, at least this is my experience watching it, like, each of Bobby's three girlfriends, like, I love them all for different reasons, but I also, like, deeply feel that none of them were right for him. And so it's like each of them was kind of, like, close but not enough. And so I know that there's other media that deals with this, but this is one of the first pieces of media in my life that I feel like I encountered where it, like, poses the question literally, like, you need to love somebody, not just somebody. You know what I mean? Like, somebody.
Yeah. I that line was specifically pointed out when I was, like, reading about the plot of this show, and I was like, oh, that's smart.
Yeah. It's like, I know that other media has dealt with this, but when I think about that question specifically about, like, it's not the end goal isn't loving someone, just anyone. The end goal is loving someone really special.
And that point is interesting to me personally, because I specifically remember when I was, like, 15 years old, and I think, like, my first ever, like, high school relationship had ended, and I was thinking about dating and the idea of eventually being married, and I was like, can't you kind of just pick somebody? and then like make it work. And for some reason in my head, I was like, aren't all people like kind of the same in the end?
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like we were fed into this idea, especially as like people socialized as women in America. Like in Western culture, it's like the idea that like literally anyone can come along and like sweep you off your feet. And then that person is the person, instead of being like, oh, wait, there are people that are like right for you and not right for you. And I think that like the show really, I think one of the most interesting moments is that the couple that gets divorced, it's like the husband like flies to Mexico, because I think maybe in the 70s you couldn't get divorced in the United States or something. I'm not really clear about it, but for some reason he flies to Mexico to get divorced. And then he calls her and she flies to meet him there. And they had an amazing time in Mexico and they still live together like afterwards. Like, they're not married anymore and they're divorced, but they, like, decide to keep their lives together. And that, I think one of them says, like, getting divorced is the best thing that's ever happened to us. And I think that's a really interesting way of, like, putting the way that love evolves and the way that we grow with each other.
Yeah. And I think, especially as you were talking about this being placed in 1970 and, I think that we as young people in the United States right now, like, we have very different ideas of what marriage means and what relationships mean. And that we're like, well, marriage does not mean a life together, as opposed to like dating means you'll either get married or break up someday. It's like they're all different types of commitment and they all mean different things. And like sometimes people get divorced and that's better for them, or sometimes people never get married and that's better for them, and like all these things. But in 1970, like, that was a really exciting idea, and the fact that its show depicts that is very interesting to me. And I like the way that they play with that idea of the, like, yeah, they get divorced and it actually works out better for them, because maybe the pressure of marriage was what something that was messing their marriage up, and like maybe they're just better off like this. And I think that's a really cool idea that they allowed to play out on stage.
Yeah, it's like, it's absolutely radical. And then there's one of my favorite songs in the musical is I'm Not Getting Married Today. And so it's like, I don't know, I feel like seeing a runaway bride, basically, like seeing a woman who's like, I am not getting married, this is not going to be happening kind of a thing, first of all, is a flip on like the normal marriage script, which is like really aggravating that that's what the script is, but it is. So the fact that like the woman in the relationship is like, actually, like, this is not a good idea, is really radical.
Pardon me, is everybody here? Because if everybody's here, I want to thank you all for coming to the wedding. I'd appreciate you going even more. I mean, you must have lots of better things to do, and not a word of it to Paul. Remember, Paul, you know the man I'm going to marry, but I'm not, because it wouldn't ruin anyone as wonderful as he is. Thank you all for the gifts and the flowers. Thank you all. Now it's back to the showers. Don't tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today.
And then also that, like, Bobby says, like, no, just marry me instead. And that's what convinces her to marry her husband is just absolutely bananas. And I love it.
I like how every time Bobby tries to convince a woman to do or not do something, she does the opposite.
Yeah, like in Barcelona, which is one of my favorite, it's not one of my favorite songs lyrically in the show, but it is a song that like gets stuck in my head very frequently. As soon as Bobby is like, yeah, maybe you should go, she goes like, no, I'll stay. And then he's like, oh no, this isn't what I wanted at all.
The problem is Bobby doesn't actually know what he wants. And so every time he tries to actually like assert agency in a relationship, it immediately backfires.
Yeah, and like towards the end of the musical, when Joanne kind of like propositions him, he says like, no, I know what I want, like I want to get married. And it's like, but all of his actions don't actually speak to that, and don't speak to the fact that that's what he wants, because he's so afraid of intimacy that he like absolutely can't be in a situation like that. So yeah, that's really interesting.
Can we just talk a little bit about the character of Joanne?
Joanne is my favorite. I know that you were going to ask me this later, but I'll answer it right now. If I were to play any character in this musical, this is like definitely, I would be asking to fill some very big shoes from like some of the greatest women in Broadway, but I would love to play Joanne. Ladies Who Lunch is one of my favorite songs in the whole show. It's just like a whole thing.
She is such an iconic character. And I think that Ladies Who Lunch I don't know if Ladies Who Lunch or Being Alive is more prominent from this musical, but they both have entered musical theater canon in such a huge way.
Yeah. And they both, I think it's really amazing that both of them have like they're, I think, songs that people put on their like do not audition using this song because it's like too many people use it to audition kind of lists. Mm-hmm. People use them so often, like, to show characterization, to show feeling, and to show range, that people tell you not to audition with those songs because they're like, other people will do it and you won't stand out at all. And yet, they're songs that grapple with, like, true existential dread. Like, being alive, being like, I'm ready to find love and love someone. And, like, Ladies Who Lunch being like, like women who stand idly by, like kind of calling herself out, are like the worst kind of women of all, who like sit by and judge other women for the decisions that they're making.
This song really got to me because I was like, am I a lady who lunches?
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely a lady who brunches because I do a podcast with about breakfast food.
Yeah, but the whole idea of the song is like she's sitting there and she's doing like this mocking toast and passing judgment on these kind of upper middle class, middle-aged women who are like out to lunch and just gossiping and doing nothing with their lives or all these things. And then she's like, but I'm the person who's just sitting here making fun of them, so I'm counted in the same category. And then as it goes on, I'm like, am I doing something worthwhile for my life or am I just watching other people?
Yeah. And I think that like that's another takeaway from this musical that I always forget until I'm at the very end at Ladies Who Lunch is not only do I walk away from this musical thinking to myself, like, I'm ready to go out and love, but I also think to myself, like, am I doing like what I want with my life?
So here's to the girls on the go. Everybody tries. Look into their eyes and you'll see what they know. Everybody dies. A toast to that invincible bunch. The dinosaur surviving the crunch. Let's hear it for the ladies who lunch. Everybody rise.
And am I, like, spending my time doing things that are meaningful for me? Like, specifically because of Ladies Who Lunch. Because also, my tag yourself in that song. I think I am often a lady who lunches because I'm a Gemini and I love gossip. But even more than that, I think I'm the returning from her class at optical arts. Her class of optical arts, or whatever that lyric is. That would be me.
Ah. Yikes, I feel too seen by some of these lines.
Oh, yeah, this song is a big call out. I feel incredibly called out by this song.
Anyway, not going to think about how much time I spend on my hair and makeup while reading this song.
Does anyone still wear a hat?
I love a good hat, but I don't find occasion to wear them very often.
I feel like that's a thing. So one of my roommates and very best friends, James, we both like have rediscovered this love of company because of co-op and because of the revival, and sometimes we'll just like say lyrics to each other. And I feel like, does anyone wear a hat? I don't know if I've said that to them or not, but I think the next time I see them I literally will say, does anyone wear a hat?
That's great. Love this plan. So it's also interesting that the two most iconic songs from this musical are pretty much the last two major songs, which are Ladies Who Lunch and Being Alive.
Yes.
And Being Alive is kind of, it's the magnum opus of this musical. It's kind of the whole thesis of this musical in a way that most of this, like, the story is non-chronological or, like, doesn't have a clear chronology. Things just happen in vignettes, but Being Alive is very clearly the conclusion of everything that's happened and sort of a do-over because it goes back to his 30th birthday with this song. And it's sort of I would say that the actual things that happen in the plot, it's very unclear when things are happening, but this is definitely the conclusion of a really strong emotional arc through the entire thing.
Someone to hold you too close. Someone to hurt you too deep. Someone to sit in your chair to ruin your sleep.
That's true, but there's more than that.
Is that all you think there is to it?
You've got so many reasons for not being with someone, but Robert, you haven't one good reason for being alone.
Come on, you're onto something, Bobby. You're onto something.
Someone to need you too much. Someone to know.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the vignettes that are chosen, and like the first time I saw this musical, this really didn't make sense to me because I also just wasn't really as familiar with nonlinear storytelling. But the fact that they're all vignettes, I kind of feel like each moment or each vignette with like each of the girlfriends and then each of the couples, I feel like each of them asks a question. And the answer to them is being alive. And that is literally what you just said, that like being alive answers all of those, because each of them kind of asks like a slightly different version of the same question as to like, why do we bother? And like, why do this at all? And that's why I think being alive is just so effective. Like, it shows such range. And also like, I think the lyrics themselves are also so relatable. Like, when you're in the pits of despair and, like, thinking about how hard it is to love and, like, how miserable it is to literally be alive and how, like, connecting with other people and loving other people is the reason that we do this. Like, it's just each of those lyrics speaks so, like, at least to me, they speak so true to like how I feel when that's like the level that I'm at that moment.
And in this show, something that repeats a few different times is the idea that it's his birthday and he has to blow out the candles and he's not making a wish. This is a thing that happens a few times throughout the show, and being alive is like, they tell him, blow out the candles and make a wish, want something. And
yeah,
that here he finally admits, like, this is what I want. I want someone to love and to be with.
Honestly, I wish that I could just send that song to all of the horrible Tinder dates I've ever had. specifically want something.
Yeah.
Just very relatable. Because also, like, make no mistake, like, Bobby is a soft boy. Like, what I would consider, like, the trope of the soft boy of, like, boy who knows art and culture very well, but, like, and like, knows how to respect women, but kind of uses that and weaponizes it against, like, just mistreating every romantic partner that he has.
A lot of the questions in Company are existential and very internal about how you approach relationships and how you think about love and all these things. But there is also this external message of these very basic things of know what you want, communicate, respect other people, that you see Bobby not doing and then learning how to do at the very end.
It's like a cautionary tale.
It's such a cautionary tale. I also just know that this song is going to enter my rotation of, like, you know those days when you're like, oh my God, everything happens so much. I feel like I'm just going to listen to this song on repeat from now on.
Yes. No, this song, it means so much to me. Like, I love what it stands for. I love how relatable it feels. And it also, I don't know, it's like it hits the level of like being a narrator who's like truly so miserable, but like truly so ready to change.
This is also somehow the same emotional beat of Joe at the end of the latest Little Women movie.
You know, I actually still haven't seen that movie. I'm a fake and a liar.
Well, it's very good. And she has a very, very good speech that has a not dissimilar message to some of this.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Also, speaking of Oscar movies from this year, just because I haven't seen Marriage Story, but apparently there's a scene where Adam Driver sings Being Alive in a bar, which is very funny to me.
So I haven't seen Marriage Story, but right before this podcast, I was like, oh, I'm going to like listen to someone singing Being Alive because that's just what I want to do. And so I typed it into YouTube and that clip came up. And it's amazing. Like, Adam Driver isn't an incredible singer or anything, but like, he's such an incredible actor. Like, the way that he delivers the lines is just, it's totally heartbreaking. And I have never seen the movie, so I definitely don't know where it's coming from. But from the little that I've heard about Marriage Story, it sounds like it's pretty relevant to what that movie is about.
That's very cool. I'm all for just putting Sondheim in movies.
Yeah, and I think I loved that Adam Driver, like, it's not, he didn't do a bad job, but he's not like a Broadway singer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I liked how casual it felt. Like, it almost felt more raw than like when Neil Patrick Harris sings it, for example. Like, it's just, I loved it. I loved it so much. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
I will have to go watch the full performance.
Yes, you definitely do. Because he kind of like blocks it. Like, they're at a bar and someone is playing the song on piano and he like goes up and he sings it and then he goes to sit back down, but then like stands back up and keeps singing it. It's just very good.
Wow. I also just remembered that Katrina Lenk is going to sing this song. And it made me emotional just to think about. So
I'm literally so ready. I'm so excited about it. I listened to the Revival soundtrack, which doesn't have Katrina Lenk on it. But I'm so excited for all of the updates that are coming with the show. Like, I think part of the reason that I had taken such a big departure from it is that it really, like, even the 2011 version does not age well. There's just a lot of really not okay in the show. Like, especially with 2020 goggles on, definitely lots that's not okay. So I'm excited to see them reapproach this musical because, like, I love the idea that, like, Bobby is a woman. Like, oh, by the way, I don't know that we mentioned that, but like in the Revival, which is coming out in March, they switch the gender roles for Bobby, and so instead of being played by a man, he's being played by a woman, Katrina Lenk. And so the role reversal, it just makes so much sense to me in 2020. Like, a really successful career woman who like is really well liked and people love her a lot, and also she like has had a bunch of boyfriends and none of them have really worked out, and so the existential dread kind of becomes like the same as Bobby, but it also, it adds a layer of urgency to it, because also like 35 is around the time when women are kind of like, do I want to have children at all, kind of thing. So I love that layer, and I'm really excited for them to explore that with this new Revival.
Yeah. I've, this is such an interesting show to swap out the gender like that, especially as you were talking about this whole idea of, like, the implicit biological clock question of, like, oh, it is... I don't think they change any lyrics or anything to be specifically about that, but it's just something that's so pervasive in our culture that it just becomes part of the show necessarily through that framework. And this is also the production. It was in London, and they're making more changes to Broadway and have an updated cast and everything. Although Patti LuPone is Joanne, both productions, because she's amazing.
Right.
But both productions were directed by Marion Elliott, who is actually the only woman to win the Tony for Best Direction twice. And she's won it twice for Best Direction of a Play. This is her first Broadway musical that she's directing. But I'm very, very excited for it. She's a brilliant director. And I think that her vision for the project and all the changes that they're making are really exciting. And I, like, very much trust her vision, which is always good to feel.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm really excited. I have a couple of questions because I've heard the London recording for the Revival. So I don't know like what the changes will be for the version that's premiering in March. But I'm kind of like, I have a couple of questions. Firstly, right before Ladies Who Lunch, it's not like the scene before, but it's like the scene before. Bobby's hanging out with the couple that got divorced and they like feel so much better after getting divorced, and the husband of the relationship kind of like comes on to Bobby a little bit and it's kind of like, we could be together if you wanted to be, and Bobby's kind of like, no thanks. So I'm really interested to see if they swap the gender for that, like maybe the wife tries to like talk to Bobby, and then also the fact that like Joanne propositions Bobby. So I'm wondering how Ladies Who Lunch kind of fits in with that. Because like the idea of like Bobby being a 35-year-old woman who, like, is probably trying to make some choices for her life as far as, like, you know, like, family planning kind of stuff. Like, I think Ladies Who Lunch is kind of like a... I think from an older woman singing to a younger woman, like, it's just such a different vibe and a different, like, implication than for Joanne to be singing that around Bobby. It almost seems like a cautionary tale kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really interested to see how that plays and to see what the relationship between those two versions will be.
I am very interested to see what all you're talking about and the potential, like, changes in the way that it tackles queer relationships and, like, potential, like, queer experiences throughout the show that are, like, kind of in the original, but in a weirdly predatory way. One of those things that aged very, very poorly. And in the revival that they're doing right now, they have actually switched one of the couples. So the person who gets cold feet and sings "I'm Getting Married Today" is now a man named Jamie. So that's a gay couple now.
Yeah.
So they're already making that change, which I think is interesting. Everything else, like Bobby's girlfriends are now all boyfriends. So the character of Bobby is not like dating, is not explicitly dating anyone like of the same gender in this production either. But it'll be interesting to see if they keep those like queer notes or how they reframe them in the new production.
Yeah, I'm also really interested to see, like, I think when you're thinking about like an update like to a musical, I also think like looking forward, people just have such different relationship styles than we did in like 1970. And so I wonder if there's going to be like Bobby thinking about like if she should be in an open relationship with somebody or like if she should like have a different style of relationship if like monogamy isn't for her. Like, I think there's so many questions that I have watching the 1970s version that I would like to be answered in the 2020 version.
Absolutely. I'm very excited for you to hopefully see it and report back.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
So we are coming to the end of our time now, unfortunately. But are you ready for the lightning round?
I am as ready as I can be.
Perfect. So what is your favorite song in Company?
Okay. I think I'm going to go with Ladies Who Lunch. It was kind of a three-way tie between Not Getting Married Today, Ladies Who Lunch, and then Being Alive. But I'm going to go with Ladies Who Lunch.
Excellent. And what is your favorite line in the show?
So I have the lyrics pulled up. Give me one second. Okay. I found it. I wanted to quote it correctly because also it happens so fleetingly in the musical. Mm. So this is from Not Getting Married Today. And because she's singing it so quickly, it's really, really easy to miss this lyric. But when she goes into one of her rants, she says, "I telephoned my analyst about it and he said to see him Monday, but by Monday I'll be floating in the Hudson with the other garbage."
Oh.
That is, it's just everything to me. And then she says, "I'm not well" afterwards.
Oh no.
It's just like, it's such a line and it's just buried in there. And I just love that song so much.
That's beautiful. All right. We already covered this earlier, but your favorite character?
Joanne. Joanne is my favorite. I love her so, so, so much. I feel like that's the character that I would want to play if I was going to like audition for this show. I feel like I would have, again, like really big shoes to fill. But that would be my answer.
I think you could do it.
Thanks.
Who would you recommend go see this show?
I think, so I want to answer this for who should see like a recording of it for the like non-2020 version and who should see the revival. I think that like basically anyone could see the revival. I'm really excited about it. And I don't know that you need to have context to go into the revival. And that's what I like the most about it. I think that it'll be able to stand on its own. I don't think you have to be a mega fan of Company to see the revival and like get something out of it. As for the older version, I kind of think that like that's probably more for the super fans because I don't know that I would recommend it even. Like, that's really hard because I think it's such an incredible musical, but so much of it ages so terribly that it's kind of a non-recommend, because so much of it, like, I don't know that I would feel proud, like, telling one of my friends to watch it and then having them be like, Trude, what is this?
That's extremely valid. Yeah. All our fingers are crossed for the new version.
I'm really excited. I already, even just by the revival soundtrack that I heard, I'm just really excited about it. I was actually going to say this earlier for the favorite lyric, because this is my favorite lyric of the 2020 revival, but during the song You Could Drive a Person Crazy, which is the three in the original version girlfriends, in the new version boyfriends, are all singing together about how frustrating it is to date Bobby. In the revival, one of the men goes, "What are you, a feminist?" And that just, it's just so much. And I love it.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. And so I think even just by that, like, little lyric inclusion makes me be like, I think this is going to go in a great direction.
And finally, if you were going to combine this musical with a different musical, which one would you pick?
Oh, man, I said that I would have an answer for this one by the end, but I don't know that I do. Hang on, let me think about it. Because my joke answer was going to be, I think that there should be a combination of Company and the SpongeBob musical, where it's just Company, but they have really great costumes, like in SpongeBob. Because also, my sister did some costumes for the recorded version of the SpongeBob musical. And she worked on a pair of pants that just had stuffed animal fishes attached to them, and she sewed them all on. And it's just wonderful. It's just wonderful in every way.
That's so delightful.
You know what? I'm going to make that my answer, even though it's kind of a silly answer, because the other thing that I really appreciated about the SpongeBob musical is that it was the most body inclusivity I've ever seen on, like, a Broadway stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the other thing that I would really appreciate, those two elements brought into Company.
Yeah, Company with body inclusivity and fish pants.
Yes, and fish pants. Everyone gets fish pants.
That sounds great. All right, thank you so much for joining me today, Trude.
Thank you, Quinn.
And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Corner of the Sky. You can find us online at theincomparable.com/COTS or follow us on Twitter at COTS Podcast. You can find Trude on Twitter at Allison Trude or at MIM Podcast. That's MIM Podcast. See you next week.
So there's a link in the description. Nope. So there's a link in the show notes.
Smash that subscribe button.
I made a mistake.
Hit that like.
I watched it with YouTube.
Hit that notification bell.